Happy New Year! We hope you enjoyed the holidays and are ready for a brand new year of the AFH podcast. It's hard to believe that 2014 is over. It seemed to go by very quickly, but we are excited to get back to another year of doing all we can to put more dogs in their forever homes. AFH is an all-breed dog rescue group serving the D.C. metro area, and you can find us online at www.aforeverhome.org. I'm David, and with me as always is my daughter, Lauren.
Hello! This is episode 14 in our series, and as we previewed last month, we have an interview with Ken and Victoria Klein, who represented AFH on their trip to Thailand last year. This was the highlight of the 2014 AFH year, and you will get to hear about it in depth. Before we get to the interview, we are going to talk about our fourth annual Casino Night fundraiser and present our Dogs of the Month.
That is right, folks. Coming up on Saturday, March 21st, is our fourth annual Casino Night and Auction fundraiser at the Piedmont Golf Club in Haymarket, Virginia. This is just a lot of fun. Can't say it any other way. All your favorite casino table games, great auction items, fantastic food and drink, and you get to mix and mingle with all the AFH volunteers and folks that make the place run day in and day out through the year. So it's really a great time. I went for the first time last year, and we just had a blast. Can't recommend it enough. Hope to see you there. And it really is our biggest fundraising event of the year, so we really need your support. Again, that's the fourth annual Casino Night and Auction fundraiser, Saturday, March 21st, 7 to 11 p.m. at the Piedmont Golf Club in Haymarket, Virginia. You can buy your tickets online, www.aforeverhome.org.
Our dogs of the month are three dogs from the Thailand rescue. We have Thailand Americano, who is 2 years old, and he is a Siberian Husky, a male, and is neutered. The second dog that we have here is Thailand Malt. The breed is a Labrador Retriever mix, and he is 2 years old and also a male, and is also neutered. And the third dog that we have is Thailand Mammoth. He is a Shepherd mix. He is 13 months old, so a little bit younger than the others, and he is neutered. And they're all very sweet and nice and ready to be adopted.
They're absolutely. They are beautiful dogs. If you go to the website again, www.aforeverhome.org, on the available dogs section of the website, they're on the fifth page, all listed together. And the dogs in the available dogs section are listed alphabetically, so you can find them easily. Please check them out. They are beautiful dogs, all with a lot of personality. And please check them out. Again, as you can tell, we have the focus on the Thailand trip this month, and we will get to our interview with Ken and Victoria Klein in just a moment. But I want to highlight the most important statistic for AFH in the year 2014 is the fact that we found forever homes for over 700 dogs. And that, again, is why we do what we do. And we want to thank you, all of our supporters, all of our fosters, all of the volunteers, and of course, everybody who came out and adopted a dog in 2014. Thank you for your support. Continue to support If Forever Home, and we'll continue to do this good work. But now, without further ado, our interview with Ken and Victoria Klein, talking about their trip to Thailand on behalf of AFH to help put more attention on the issue of the illegal dog meat trade and bring some dogs back here to find their forever homes. Here we go.
Okay, we are joined today by Ken and Victoria Klein, who were the AFH representatives on the trip to Thailand. And we are happy. Thanks for joining us today, guys. This first podcast of the year, we like to take a look back at 2014, at all the great things AFH did. And for me, I think most of us, the signature event of the year was the trip to Thailand, certainly logistically, but for really encapsulating a lot of what we try to do. It was the marquee event. I kind of think of it as like the Yorkie Claws rescue of 2013 turned out to kind of be the big event that the trip to Thailand was. So please just take us through And for those who haven't seen it, on the website, www.aforeverhome.org, there is a Thailand travel log. There's videos, there's pictures. Please do check it out. So we'll do a little bit of the background. If you'd just like to tell us, how did AFH find out about the illegal dog meat trade problem and Soy Dog Rescue Foundation over there in particular?
One of our key volunteers, Patty Stinson, saw some posts by Soy Dog in reference to the illegal dog meat trade in Thailand on social media, and she brought it to the board's attention. And they kind of sat down, talked about it, and decided that this is something that we should really get involved in. So we contacted Soy Dog and asked them how could we help. And of course they say, oh, you know, you can send money, you can be a foster, you can be a flight volunteer, but being a larger organization, we thought it would be more beneficial to do something bigger. So we decided to send a couple of volunteers, us, over there to document and to bring stories back to the U.S. so that people here could really see what it's about and to help get them involved, and also bring a few dogs back with us and try to continue that relationship with Soy Dogs so we can continue to bring their numbers down.
All right, and that's one of the key things that we have done is we have established a relationship with Soy Dog so that since we made our trip to Thailand, there have been two additional dogs that have come back from Thailand, from Soy Dog to AFH. Soy Dog had never worked with a rescue before. They'd only worked with individual adopters. So the relationship with AFH is unique for them. And it's a little different because typically when they send a dog to the States, it's going directly into its adoptive family home. So what they're doing with us that's different is they're sending the dog to a forever home and into our foster program, and then we assume responsibility for the dog and we place it using our typical methodologies. We do work a lot with many dogs, not just the dogs from Thailand, and we found that many of these dogs do have behavioral issues and things that are a little different from, you know, your typical U.S. dog, and these animals have always lived on the street. Their behaviors are a little different, and they need to acclimate. So it takes a little longer to get them to the point where they're, you know, fully acclimated and adjusted into their adoptive homes when we do place them. You know, and our fosters will typically work with them for a while before we will put them into a new home. So it makes it a little different when we work with the Thai dogs, but by and large, they're four-legged rescue dogs, and you know we find great homes for them.
That's fantastic. What struck you most when you got there and kind of toured the Soy Dog facilities? Just from the travelogue, knowing that the sheer volume of dogs was significantly different, and you just alluded to it, the whole. You had some of the dogs that clearly had fairly regular contact with humans at some point, but a lot of them hadn't and were more that pack dog mentality. What did that? So just your reflections on what you saw there.
I think that most of the dogs in Thailand actually do have interactions with human on a fairly regular basis, but it's not the type of interactions that you typically see here. It's, you know, like if you look at Bangkok in particular, pretty much any of the large cities, the dogs are constantly interacting with humans because they have no choice. The population density in the cities is very, you know, very high. So the dogs are constantly interacting with humans, but it's not the interaction that you see here in the States. It's not, you know, sitting down and cuddling and petting and things like that. It's, you know, walking along the streets, you know, they'll come up. And you know, people will frequently feed the dogs. They'll pet them on occasion, but most of all, it's just kind of an indifference more than anything else. You have community dogs. Tori, you want to talk a little bit about how they have the community dog standard as opposed to, you know, when you think of an owned dog in the United States, it's David, you own a dog. Victoria owns a dog. Ken owns a dog. It's not so much that way in Thailand.
Well, people do own dogs, but it's conceptualized very differently than it is here. it's closer to what you would see if you, you know, are driving around the back roads in Kentucky. The dogs live on the street. They feed themselves for the most part. They don't get any medical care, but at night they're allowed to sleep on someone's porch. They might get leftovers. Some people will buy them dog food, but they're not really owned. You know, if somebody asks, they'll say, oh yeah, that's my dog, but they don't take them to the vet. They don't do anything with them. So really they're street dogs that just have a steady meal at least once a day. So even the owned dogs have a street mentality. They have a pack mentality. They fight for what they want, whether it's, you know, sleeping space or food or a prime spot out of the sun, they fight for it. And that's something that we've been seeing with the dogs that we've brought back, is that they have difficulty understanding that their food is assured, their bed is assured. Everything is, you know, safe and comfortable and warm, and they don't need to worry about it. But they figure it out pretty quickly, and then they turn into, you know, love bug, couch, potato dogs very fast. But you see a lot of that, too, at the shelter in particular, because they've got 1,500 dogs, you know, between 200 and 300 dogs per run, all on top of each other, and there is only so much food, and there is only so much water, so they fight for it. And it's very much a hierarchy, and it's very, very visible. So, I don't know, it kind of translates either way. Whether they're in the shelter or they're out on the street, it's the same mentality. They're all kind of the same.
Got it. Can you give us a bit of a feel, too, with Soy Dog, and for folks listening, that's SOIDOG, Soy Dog Foundation. Do they have any, do they operate somewhat similarly to how AFH operates? Is it, do they do, just because of the volume, because of the culture, what are the differences? Are there any main differences between the foundation approach?
Well, Soy Dog was started by an English couple, so their mentality approaching it is closer to ours than, say, if it was started by a Thai group. They don't have the ability to do home checks like we would do, but they're extremely cautious in who they adopt to, what standards they are held to. They make sure all the dogs are 100% vetted and they're healthy to fly before they come. They do follow-up checks every week for months when they get home to their new homes. And then they have to continue doing that once a month. And then it gets less and less as they go. But they're constantly in contact with their adopters to make sure everything's going well. And should something go wrong or the adopter doesn't work with the dog, they do everything in their power to find another foster for them or to bring them back. Whatever they have to do, they do it. So in terms of going above and beyond and getting what needs to get done, they do it just like we would do it.
But they do things, some things differently. Because of the community dog mentality, a lot of times what they'll wind up doing is, you know, they'll go down into a neighborhood and they'll see a dog that's been injured. They'll bring the dog into their facility and they'll take care of it medically. You know, they'll make sure that it's, you know, up to date on its vaccines. They'll treat any injuries that it has. You know, say for example, it's got a laceration. They'll make sure that it gets cleaned and stitched and all that kind of good stuff. But then typically they'll take it back to where they picked it up and release it again, rather than, you know, maintaining it in their shelters, because that's just the culture there. The culture is that it's a community dog, and you're shaking your head now.
No, it's not because it's a community dog. It's because they only have room for 400 dogs. And since euthanasia is taboo in Thailand, they have to reserve the space for only the most critical dogs. The ones that can't be re-released because the environment is dangerous or they medically can't do it, they're too old, they can't fend for themselves in the street. So what they do is if the dog is relatively healthy or it has something that can be treated with a medication once a day, they'll re-release it at a site, but they have feeders, people that do follow-up care with the dogs stationed there. So if the dog, say, has pneumonia, they send it out and re-release it, the feeder's giving him his meds, but he takes a bad turn, the feeder will alert them and they'll send someone out to pick up the dog, bring it back in, and do intensive care. But that's not a cultural issue. That's more just that they don't have the space. But they still maintain follow-up care with the dogs that they release. They're not just kicking them back out on the street to fend for themselves.
Got it. Let's talk a little bit, just for the folks who aren't as aware of it, the illegal dog meat trade. This is become an even greater problem where dogs are picked up off the street and then, I think, correct me if I'm wrong on this, smuggled north primarily into Vietnam and now maybe increasingly into China as well. Mm-hmm. What else can you tell us about that, just for folks that aren't as tuned into it?
The dog meat trade in terms of smuggling live animals into Vietnam has been reduced significantly.
Right, and the operative word there is live animals.
Right. Now what they're seeing more and more is there are tanneries and butcheries on the Thai side of the border where dogs are brought to. They slaughter them there, tan their hides, and package them in ice and send them across the border in trucks. Under the floorboards, under the bed of the truck. It's much easier to smuggle meat than it is to smuggle a live animal. So now when they find a bust, you know, they're not finding live animals. They find maybe one or two if you're lucky.
Right, and really what it boils down to is soy dog, one of their key things that they do that we don't do is they're a politically active organization.
Absolutely.
So they have worked very diligently with the Thai government to, for example, to make it illegal to transport live animals across the border for the purpose of slaughter.
Well, the transport issue has always been illegal to transport animals across the border without a passport. Like in Europe and Asia, you have to have a pet passport in order to go anywhere. But what Soy Dog has done, while we were there, they were campaigning, John in particular, John Daly was campaigning to have the first animal welfare law enacted in Thailand. And they successfully did that. I think it went into effect in December, on the 14th or 15th. Whereas we don't do that kind of thing. We just, you know, HSUS does it or PETA does it. You know, we don't do that. But because they're the face of animal welfare in Thailand, they have taken it upon themselves to really push the legislation and try to get their foot in the door. And they've done that so far. And they're hoping to continue to afford more protection for the animals there. Because right now, it's very, very basic, but they're excited that there's something in place.
Got it. And how big an organization is Soy Dog? How many staff? Not in like any kind of dollar figure, but just are they doing it? I mean, because as folks know, AFH is volunteer-led and volunteer-supported. Do they have... maybe even just in comparison to AFH, is it a kind of a group of, say, five or six key people and a legion of volunteers, or is it, how are they set up?
They're more set up like ASPCA or, you know, one of the big corporate type welfare leagues. They do have a ton of volunteers and they're wonderful. They work really, really hard. They come from all over the world to work in their Phuket facility and also out in the streets. They have people that are, you know, feeding dogs and doing all kinds of stuff. But they have a staff. I'm not sure how many they are. It doesn't seem like it's huge, but maybe 20 or 30 people. John and Jill are the founders that are still there. There is a third founder, but she left and started another group. But right.
and another thing,
more corporate.
Yeah, another key difference with Soy Dog is that they are an international organization.
Right.
They have offices in San Francisco and London, I believe, where they actually have physical presence. And they're building relationships with other organizations like in Vietnam and Laos, mm-hmm. and Cambodia, other areas where the dog meat trade is prevalent. And in some of these places, they'll have a representative that, you know, it may be a transient person who, you know, goes around to regional places to try to work with these other countries to, you know, once again, doing the same types of things. They're really working on the legislative end of things to try to put in a legal framework within which to work, because in many of these countries, there are no animal welfare laws for domestic animals.
Or they don't cover the meat trade specifically.
Yeah, even in Thailand, there is no governmental organization targeted for domestic animals. All of the animal welfare guidelines that are in place are for livestock. So they don't have an organization within the government that's dedicated to domestic animals.
Right. And the other thing Soydog is working on right now, in conjunction with several other groups throughout Asia, is cultural bias. They're trying to get people out of the idea that culturally it's okay to eat dogs. That belief has only been held since probably the 1950s during the famines, when the government used it, you know, eating dogs as a way to just keep people alive. So they're working culturally to change the perspective and get people on board with the idea that dogs are for petting, not for eating.
That's an important distinction. In terms of, you take a trip like this, it's a long way to go. You have certain, expectations heading in. How were your expectations met? How were they different? What did you see that really surprised you? What stood out?
Well, for me, the first thing that was really unusual or different was simply getting there. The first leg of the journey, going to Thailand, we flew through Beijing, and it's a 14-hour flight to get to Beijing, which that's a very long flight.
Well, travel tips is the next question.
So. Yeah. Yeah. So the Beijing airport was very interesting. Their security was different. Mm-hmm. They really took interest in our cameras, for one thing. They wanted to make sure that we were using the cameras for appropriate purposes. Just transferring within the airport, going from the international terminal, from one international terminal to another, because we flew in from the U.S. and we're flying out to Thailand, we had to go through the security process, and they were pretty extensive. And one of the things that they really took interest in addition to the cameras was I had a battery pack, extended life battery for the cell phone. And they took a lot of interest in that, and I thought I was going to have to surrender it before I could get through, but they finally let me take it and go on through. So that was very interesting, and the airport had a lot of, international stores, recognized brands like there were Swarovski and, very high-end stores within the airport. So that was kind of a surprise as well. But when we arrived in Thailand, the airport was kind of interesting. Trying to find a taxi was an interesting experience. They had a bunch of stands where people were, obviously hawking taxis or rides or things, and we had to, we had to rely on a couple of people to, just point us in the right direction, because obviously neither one of us speaks Thai. So that was interesting.
Mm-hmm. The usual difficulties of international travel.
Yeah. It's kind of what I expected. Phuket was not as much of a culture shock as Bangkok was.
True.
Phuket, they put us essentially in a resort. It's, a hotel room like normal, but you're surrounded by other foreigners, a lot of people from Russia, from China, a couple of English speakers, but mostly, off of the Asian continent. But you're pretty insulated. There's not a lot until you really get out into the streets, and then you see dogs running through the street, you see all kinds of stands on the sides of the road that you don't know if it's a restaurant or street vendor. It's just very different than it is here. And then when you go to Bangkok, it's extremely busy and very, very dirty, and it's like a big city anywhere.
Right, right.
But in overdrive.
And hugely sprawling.
Yeah. Massive city.
It is, as she says, a massive, massive city, and there are people everywhere.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's very different.
Well, what about those travel tips? Anything you absolutely recommend that came in particularly
Make sure
handy?
Your Kindle is well loaded.
No, I mean, there are a lot of really interesting cultural things to see there. A lot of the temples are beautiful, and they're sprawling, magnificent, you know, architecturally interesting places.
Speaking of the temples, that's another tied back to the dog story was a lot of times you'll see a lot of dogs at the temples because obviously, you know, they're Buddhist temples, so, you know, there's no euthanasia. And the monks will ensure that the dogs are fed. They won't do much else for them, but they'll make sure that they're fed.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
And a lot of people will just drop their dogs at a temple. You know, if there's a dog they want to take out of the neighborhood or something, they'll just drop it at a temple.
Right. Got it. Well, thank you very much for taking the trip, for taking the time. I wanted to ask you too, just anything else you wanted to add, but I think we should address. And this is very well covered in the travel log, but there was some concern from a very small group of, you know, a few people that, hey, why is AFH taking the time to do this? We got plenty of work to do here in the States, regionally, locally, et cetera. Why are we spending, you know, time and money to do this? And I just, can you please just give us the short answer to that, which is
sure. Yeah. The short answer is that AFH is a very large organization. We have a very diverse community of supporters, volunteers, donors, etc. And they have a wide range of interests. When we first discovered, you know, found out about the dog meat trade that was going on in Thailand, you know, we started communicating with some of the volunteers, some of the supporter base, and we got a wide range of responses. Everything from, you know, we've got plenty of dogs here in Virginia that need help, to, you know, absolutely, we really need to get involved with this. So it's like, you know, when you look at AFH, we bring on a regular basis, we bring dogs in from many locations in the United States, predominantly from, you know, the states, Virginia and bordering states. Sometimes, you know, we'll go a little further afield, like we'll go to, you know, to Georgia, to Florida, to Alabama, Mississippi, etc. But when you're an organization as large as we are, with the number of supporters we have, we had a significant number of our supporters that encouraged us to get involved with this. We collected donations specifically for this event. So we didn't spend money from our general fund for this. This was, you know, we knew that there would be people that would question it and, you know, wonder why Thailand? You know, why go halfway around the world? I mean, it literally is halfway around the world. It's a 12-hour time difference. Why go to Thailand when there's such a need here? And it's because we have the diverse supporter base, and we've had people that, you know, some of our community that was encouraging us to do this. We had people that donated funds specifically for this purpose. And it was also to raise awareness of this issue of the dog meat trade. It's something that most people here in the United States aren't even aware exists. So, you know, it's when you start doing any research on it and you start seeing how cruel, heinous this activity is, you know, you really do feel compelled to get involved. So that's what we've done. And, you know, that was the key motivators behind us doing this was one, just the heinousness of the situation, that we felt that we needed to do something. And two, that we felt that just, you know, sending money wasn't good enough. We needed to do something more. And that our supporter base, a significant portion of it, was encouraging us to do so.
Yeah. And that there's no doubt after the fact with some of the good, I think we've brought a lot of attention to the problem here.
Yeah, and hopefully this podcast will raise a little bit more attention. And, you know, we will continue bringing dogs back. So if anyone has, you know, friends or family that are traveling to Thailand, please do get in touch with us, and we will put you in contact with the right people so that we can, you know, you could perhaps be a flight volunteer. And when we use the term flight volunteer, what that is, you have two ways to ship a dog. From Thailand to the United States or anywhere really. One is unaccompanied. So if you just take a dog and put it on an airplane, it's essentially treated as freight. And to fly a dog freight from Thailand to the United States is about $1,200. The other way to ship a dog is as a companion animal. So that's where the flight volunteer comes in. The flight volunteer simply says, yes, I will take responsibility for this dog for through the trip. They'll coordinate with the soy dog representatives. They'll have someone there that takes care of all of the paperwork. They meet you at the airport. They make sure that you get the dogs onto the plane. And then when you get to the destination airport, they simply, you claim the dog, get it through customs, and you're set to go. So in the case of being a flight volunteer for AFH, we would have someone that would meet you at the airport, and we would take possession of the dog at that point. So if you have the ability to be a flight volunteer, even if you're not flying back to DC, if you're flying to anywhere in the United States, if you have the ability to be a flight volunteer, that would be a tremendous help, because the price difference is like $1,200 versus like $400. So it's a significant difference.
Significant difference. Very good. Anything else you'd like to add? Any reflections?
All right. I think we're good.
Well, thanks for taking the time to share your experiences. Thanks for going.
Always a pleasure,
thanks
David.
Thanks for all you both continue to do for AFH.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for listening. That is a little longer than our usual podcast, but we think very informative. So before we get out of here, last thing, just remember our regular adoption events every Sunday, 1 to 4 at the Chantilly Petco. We've got events the next four Sundays, the 18th and 25th in January, and the 1st and 8th in February. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next month.